You're listening to Oblivion. It is November 21st, 2022. Well, David, there was a massacre in a place we've both lived, Colorado Springs, yep. Colorado. I lived there from 1987 to 1991 while I was going to college at Colorado Springs, Colorado, just north of downtown Colorado Springs. And you were there quite a bit later, right? It was it in the 2000s, a couple times?
Yes, I lived, I guess, about four blocks east of Colorado College campus.
No, when? What time periods?
Well, I was in Colorado. I lived near Colorado College from 2011 to 2013, and then I had lived in nearby Manitou Springs in the foothills of Pikes Peak from 2006 to 2007.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So, yeah. So what, maybe you know more than me, it was a massacre at a gay club or something like that, or?
Right. LGBTQ club called Club Q.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was on the east side of town near North Academy. And I read an account last night where a number of the regular patrons already sensed fear and a bad vibe because that area, Colorado Springs, has been notorious for being hostile toward that community. And in fact, it was out of Colorado Springs that in 1992, the same year that the super liberal Bill Clinton became president, that Colorado law codified that there couldn't be any protections, any anti-discrimination protections, that is, protections against discrimination for the LGBT community, which basically legalized discriminating against these people. And it was struck down by the Supreme Court in 1996. But now that I think about it, it's got to be only a matter of time before this new Supreme Court tosses that ruling out and says, I mean, if a woman can't get an abortion, then why is it okay to be gay? Because I don't remember reading anything in the Constitution that said you have a right to be gay or lesbian or trans or queer or bisexual. So
Founding fathers didn't say anything about that. So you're on your own.
Right. The founding fathers, they weren't, that wasn't Club Q. That was a bunch of good cisgendered heterosexual men with penises.
Yeah.
Although I can't confirm or deny that they had penises, but I wouldn't doubt our official tradition, historical narrative.
Yeah.
You're right to bring this up, because the real story, not just this week, but of the year, is these mass shootings. And I just got done completing a run. So thank you for your patience as I was finishing that up. But at the end of my run, I was thinking about, nobody talks about this. And the cliche storyline that we're given is, well, we become desensitized to it and it's just too much. And I don't think that's it. I mean, I think that people really get off on the violence and they know it has to happen. But if it doesn't happen to them, then that means that they're living right and God is looking after them. And so it's whether it's Uvalde, and that's certainly the that and Sandy Hook, I mean, are both nightmares. You say that it's acceptable to kill children. Then you say you have morality. And then this one, the one at Club Q, is sickeningly reminiscent of the Pulse shooting that happened in Florida.
Right, right.
And that wasn't that long ago. I think that was in 2016. And then, of course, there was the Las Vegas shooting that happened not long after the the Pulse shooting. And among the unbelievable failures of Joe Biden as a human being, someone that was in the Senate for 36 years, vice president for 8 years, president for 4 years, and is pounding his chest because the Democrats didn't lose as badly in the midterms as was projected. So it's a win because it wasn't as bad a loss as it was expected to be.
The revolution begins.
Right. Team Blue. How can these shootings just go on and on and on? And they're not, it's not a priority to stop this. And instead what we get is, well, our morality is we're protecting the unborn, and the way that we protect young people is we're going to save their precious brains from the super high-powered THC that the out-of-control rule by executive order super liberal governor Andy Beshear is now apparently going to let Kentuckians get their hands on. I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that, or if you had additional thoughts about the gun violence. Probably we need to say more about the gun violence before we turn to.
Well, no, I don't really have much to say about it. I mean, this is kind of the, mass shootings, which, you know, includes it's three or above for a mass shooting. And under that definition, there's usually one a day in the United States, if not more than one. Now, the ones where you've got, so this one isn't really, as far as kills, pretty low down on the list. I think it's only five. There's 13, five people dead, 13 in the hospital. So, you know,
we don't want to forget about the killings at the University of Virginia, the three football team members and other people were shot. That was announced right after last week, right when we concluded.
There was
a shooting at, I think, New Mexico State University.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then there were four students who were stabbed, I think, at the University of Idaho. And of course, well, it wasn't a shooting, so why would we be worried about that? The violence and the gun violence and the way that Americans just seem to eat this up, and they're so prideful in how tough they are, and they call themselves resilient, and they really don't seem to care and want to do anything about it. And that would certainly be consistent with the horror of the American response or non-response to the pandemic, which is just let everybody get sick, let everybody die, let everybody suffer. That's how we'll handle it. We just won't deal with it.
I'm looking at the wiki list of mass shootings in the United States in 2022. and there's about one. Well, it's the 13th had five in one day, 13th of November. So there was Colorado, the most recent, unless something's happened within the last hour or so, quite possible. Five dead from that. Virginia, four dead. Woman and her three children were killed in a domestic dispute inside a house. Okay, so that's in Virginia. Puerto Rico had, well, it's only two. I guess if it's injuries. So if it's above three or more, a mass shooting, it doesn't have to be killed. So
so what are those numbers again? From just this year alone?
Oh, well, I'm just looking at the list, and on the 13th of November, there were five separate events.
Just on that one day.
On that one day. Kill count wasn't that high. It was only four within the whole bunch. So, you know,
how can this happen in any kind of a functional society? And how can this happen and it not be an issue and a priority?
Well, David, because it says in the Constitution that we have the right to mass shoot each other.
Right.
And this is an inalienable right. There isn't much more to say about that. And yeah, we can transition out of that because it's just so goddamn depressing. Quickly, and a lighter note, just in one of your things you still have an interest in, it was close to an obsession when you were young, the Artemis One. I got a link on Twitter of the live camera, and it's currently sort of orbiting the moon right now. This Artemis One is it's the test for the return, return
to the moon. Well, I mean, that is pretty cool.
Yeah. And, which shows that because you like that, David, that shows that you're a Trump lover and a fascist.
Because
Mr. Space Force's main idea and they're running with it. Elon Musk is heading this venture, I guess, because isn't it a SpaceX craft?
He's going to get all the people that live on the moon to get on Twitter.
Yeah. He's setting up a base just for him, I think is what it's all about. So he can just live there. In his own little bubble, moon bubble. Please leave this Earth, Elon Musk. The ongoing disaster of his purchase of Twitter, which, of course, he goes in there and just fires half the workforce and then, another quarter have quit and, a complete... fuck up, I mean, maybe it's not a fuck up. Maybe that was the whole point. I kind of doubt it. It's just what happens when you have a lot of power like that.
Well, what I wonder is how does the traditional model of supply and demand hold up when the owner of the business has hundreds of billions of dollars? Mm. It's just difficult to see how someone like Elon Musk has any incentive to make money.
I totally get your point. Well, when it comes down to it, he is a total welfare king. The SpaceX thing, which he was kind of given because he knew some NASA director and, there was this privatization thing, which is all that SpaceX is, right? It's handing it over to corporations, the rocket programs. And, they basically handed over a bunch of technology, those really cool rockets that, they go up and then they come back down and land on the pad. That stuff, of course, was not invented by SpaceX. This was
by private. Yeah. Entrepreneurs, that's public taxpayer-funded research.
Yeah, that was already developed, and he just took it and now makes money off of it from government contracts just straight into that company's pocket. And it's a
make-believe capitalism.
Yeah, there's no capitalism at all with that at all. I mean, zero. I mean, it's the extreme opposite. So the very idea that this guy is supposed to be claiming that he's a capitalist and some kind of he probably believes this, right? That he's a god.
I doubt it. I think he knows that it's all a sham, and I just think that he and these other people like Bezos, and I think that these people just can't help themselves.
Well, what would happen in a situation where you're basically have more money than God, you kind of think that you are a God and that you do deserve all this. And what you're doing and saying is exactly true all the time. So that's why I think that he does actually believe it, his own
He may believe that he's God,
eating his own tail, sucking his own dick, whatever you'd say.
But I don't think that he sees himself as I don't know if this is a good example or not, but a cliche example would be Henry Ford or some of these people from the early 20th century that I think anything that happened before World War II, because that's where all the modern day technology, the rocket technology and the computer technology, it has its genesis in that. World War II and then late 40s, early 50s, post-World War II, beginning of the Cold War era. But I think that Musk and Bezos know that they aren't the type of person that basically came from nothing. They had a good idea. They worked really hard. It took off, and then
entrepreneur, and man.
They had a lot of money. So
yeah.
And the thing with Bezos is, I mean, look at how he was already quite wealthy, but the lockdowns during 2020 had a lot to do with why he made such unbelievable profits. That year, and became even wealthier because no one was going to go out, so they just got all their worthless stuff online.
And their wealth is a highly financialized thing, meaning that, you know, once upon a time, it was kind of important that your earnings, your earnings ratios, this, that, and the other, the fundamentals of your business, and then you would make a estimate of your earnings and whether or not you met those goals was your stock price would be awarded or punished in regards to that. Well, with the financialization of the market, basically that's totally gone out the window. I don't even know if currently, maybe now, but Amazon for the longest time did not have a profit, even with some all kinds of advantages they would get from their size, and of course they're for a long time not paying sales tax to states, gave them a big advantage to retailers, brick and mortar retailers. So there was that example of basically a company that's only kept afloat by the injection of money from the big banks, et cetera. And then this is the exact same pattern with the other oligarchs, especially Elon Musk, who's, company was valued at $1 trillion. Well, it's valued at $1 trillion because the stock went through the roof through the same process of financialization. So there are, even when you say they're the richest people and they're the most powerful, it's not based on any fundamentals of their companies. Tesla is only recently had a profit-making year, and of course that means not really. You'd have to make profit for a long time because you didn't make profit for all the rest of this time. Really, you were losing money all this other time. For you to catch up and to actually be on the plus side, it would take a long time for them to be profitable. It's a whole scam of the fundamentals of them being so, that is the basis of our economy now. It's a fairy tale land of made up wealth and power just because they can,
It's a bailout economy. I mean, the government protects the banks. The banks just accumulate all of this money. And so the banks are no longer. I mean, when the bailout occurred, and then the bankers were not prosecuted, the banks did become nationalized. Whether anybody wants to acknowledge it, whether the media is going to pretend like it didn't happen. See reference to manufactured cultural amnesia there. But the banks are nationalized, and they accumulate this incredible amount of money. And then whenever one of these businesses needs more money to enhance its profits or to insulate it from poor decision making and out of control risk, the money is there. And so The other way in which this is just completely not any kind of capitalism is you just don't see any kind of productivity or anything constructive or valuable being achieved. Twitter is a perfect example. Like, why do we need Twitter, right? So that you can have a bunch of, you can have a cesspool of toxicity and misinformation and lies. Mm-hmm. How is that competition? How is the idea of competition is that it elevates performance, right? You get people to do their best work. And Twitter is an example of that. Without Twitter, you couldn't have communication that bad, right? It's like the point of Twitter isn't to enhance or improve communication. It's to turn communication into something useless and dysfunctional, right? Misinformation, disinformation, lies, conspiracy theories, and toxicity. Why do we need this? Like, how is this contributing to the betterment of society? Whereas you could argue, right, that your grocery stores, your farms, and your businesses, if you're just looking at it from a general business model perspective, that's exactly what these things do. That if people don't have an incentive to do good work, then the clothes that you buy will unravel. The cars that you drive will blow up, right? Unsafe at any speed. Although that's actually an example of why you need the government regulation. But the general theory of capitalism is that it provides an incentive for people to do their best work, that you reward good performance and you encourage good performance to get better, right? And that if you don't have this incentive, then all people are going to do is just sit around and do mediocre or poor work. But when I look at Twitter, again, I think that you couldn't, if you just didn't have any kind of social media, you wouldn't have people communicating as poorly as they do on Twitter. And the same thing is true with Amazon and these other delivery services. It escapes me what exactly is so great about it, and what is it that people are buying and getting that is making their lives better, that they can get something delivered to them, whatever it might be. The last point that I would make about why this bailout economics or make-believe capitalism that Elon Musk thrives on is a sham and a fraud is that these people aren't paying taxes, right? And so they can just keep gobbling up all this wealth, and then they never have to worry about paying taxes on it. Whereas in a real capitalist system, when people pay taxes on their earnings, and that's another benefit, theoretical at least, of capitalism, is that if you do have all this wealth being generated, then you're going to have a robust tax revenue, right, that can then fund your public programs like schools and bridges, all the things that have been neglected until the super incredible Infrastructure Act was passed by our unbelievable, amazing Team Blue Congress. But if people pay taxes on the wealth that they earn, that creates a built-in regulator so that people don't just think more, more, more. Right. So that once you have a certain amount of money, it does become pointless to make even more money because you're just going to have to turn around and pay more taxes. But having said all of that, I do think that the what's the name of the spacecraft that's gone to the moon?
Artemis.
Artemis. I'm always all for exploration of any kind, whether it's exploration of the mind, exploration of the oceans, exploration of the mountains, and certainly going into space.
I kind of have, I guess overall I'm against the the manned crafts, the advances in the robotics, I think have pretty much made that manned missions obsolete as far as, you know, beyond just it being cool, you can put a human on this satellite or this other planet. You know, I don't think it's to get science, you could just use robots. And it's just too hard on the people for anything. I mean, of course, it's a lot more expensive to launch people. And it's risky just on the, you know, the thing blowing up.
Challenger.
falling in into the moon at a very high speed.
That's precisely why I think that it's so valuable that human beings actually do it. I mean, I think...
Well, but I mean, it's one thing, we already done it. So that's, I mean, we know that it's possible to do. And especially the Mars thing, that's just a suicide mission, because basically for you to be on Mars, unless you just bury yourself under this, you know, very thick layer of soil, you're going to just get radiated. I'll get up and you'll be getting, you know, your life will definitely be shortened because you've been zapped by radiation for the multiple years that you're on out in space. So just for those reasons, I don't...
Because there's no protection from the solar rays.
Right, right. So as far as exploration, yeah, maybe you could accelerate once you got there your ability to look and see if there were some microbes once upon a time living in Mars 3 billion years ago. I mean, is this really... is it, you know, I think that we would eventually find such a thing anyway with a robot. So, you know, maybe be a little more patient and just wait for the robot technology to catch up to where it would be better than the human anyway, to like, you know, geology, whatever it would be, that it would be advantage for a human to be there.
But don't you think that the human being has an innate need to explore, and that there's a curiosity?
Sure, yeah. I mean, just in, if you don't have any, if you set aside these costs, these dangers, these, well, just the amount of resources required to do this exploration, I mean, well, is a robot, if a robot can do basically the same thing, explore, you know, remotely, less danger, I mean, it just seems like I would be willing to spend money on that. Of course, you've got the more extreme libertarian types that are like, don't want any money, government. I don't want any of my money going to this stuff, you know, which at least the more extreme ones can be consistent, where it's like, you know, they want the minimum going for a war. They want the minimum going for this and that. I can sort of agree with that, although it lacks the moral moral parameters to not doing these things. Yeah, so, I mean, overall, I'm against the manned programs just because of, you know, just the basic thing. We've got things we need to deal with here on Earth.
I do agree with you.
That money should be going to that shit, you know.
I agree with you in that respect.
Yeah.
Certainly, if bridges aren't being maintained, if the schools are poor, if people, including children, are going hungry, and people are getting shot, it's kind of a distraction, and it's an additional waste of resources to be sending a spacecraft to the moon, to be sending people back to the moon. But the way I would look at it is, the real waste is the money that is spent on war. And so I would say, rather than have a 20-year war that everybody knew we couldn't win, and just basically do it for fun and to throw away a bunch of money and a bunch of lives, and to, you know, the game between people to reinforce the idea that life is about violence and hatred and fear, and to get people to thrive on it, which is not all that difficult to get Americans
to do. And there's a dark side to the military sense to these rocket programs. Sure,
because they become appropriated for.
Well, the technology really is military first, right? To have missiles.
Overlaps into the point that I'm making, yeah. Which is, if we're going to have a military, mm-hmm. and if we have a need to advance this technology, it's much better, and I would even say it is inspirational, that it's done in the name of exploration. In other words, rather than have the United States and the Soviet Union have World War III, have them have a race to the moon, right? So it's kind of like my same argument in favor of sports, that certainly there are a number of unsavory things about sports, but rather than just have people go out and kill each other, you know, give them a ball, teach them certain skills, teach them something about teamwork and cooperation, right? And then it can become something that is cathartic and exciting, right? Mm-hmm. So the Russians were the first ones into space with Yuri Gagarin. The Americans were the first ones to the moon.
Yeah.
And so these, I think, are great accomplishments. I mean, these mm-hmm. are the kinds of things that human beings can do that make me believe in humanity, that you have this creature walks around on Earth as a nomad, and then thousands of years later, of looking up into the heavens, into the sky, it can actually figure out how to place itself on this moon, mm-hmm. still, I think, is totally incredible. And I think it would be good to put people back on the moon and to remind people of these relatively peaceful ways that humans can express their need for conquest.
Right. Yeah, so I can go with that. I'm for the pure science, and I'm for exploring and learning new things. And
my question is, how soon will it be before we have pot shops on the moon?
Yeah,
and William Shatner can pay Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
To fly Elon Musk's rocket, so everybody, all the celebrities.
Yeah, you can.
William Shatner and Bill Walton.
Yeah, the goddamn moon better be like
bong hits.
Better be like no prohibition on the moon, man. That would just be a bummer. And that's actually Le Guin of the science fiction author. One of her books. Basically, she was kind of a lefty, at least this story was. I can't say about her personal politics, but The Dispossessed is a science fiction novel where it's a Earth-like world, a humanoid world, and there was basically a rebellion. And it was a highly, hierarchical society with slavery and all the rest, and of a certain number of people went to the surrounding moon that was, you could live there and grow crops, even though it was like comparatively very barren. So they went and made this anarchist society on this moon. It's a pretty good book. Made me think of that. but to your point, as far as the accomplishments. It's disappointing in the whole scheme of things. The argument that, you know, it costs too much money or whatever, you should spend that money on people or, you know, world hunger or whatnot, is sort of true, but sort of not. I mean, there's basically, if to go along with the socialist theme, if the means of production were shared, everybody would be rich and all these problems would not be a thing, right? And so you would have plenty of money left over for however many moon trips people thought was necessary, right? And
right.
And it possibly, you know, maybe we would be so rich then that we'd be doing that all the time, or we would say, well, this is cost too much, we need to use our resources.
Or maybe life would be actually so good on Earth that we wouldn't have such an intense fight or flight.
Desire to get the fuck out of here.
We need to go to another planet, and we would actually take care of our own world, and we wouldn't have all this pollution and artificial light, and at night we could just enjoy the stars.
Just look at the stars.
Because the reality is, man, we're already in space. We're already there.
You're right, man. I never thought of that.
That's where we are, man.
We're just kind of circling that star out there. So you had on the COVID death projections. I'm assuming this is some projections related to a possible surge coming up.
Correct. Yes. So give me just 1 second. I'm going to go to my super high power technology system and look up these numbers I wrote down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Wow, man.
Wow. Yeah.
Where did I write all
these things
down?
Are going
okay,
on at once.
So this was all triggered by more China bashing, right? Because they're doing more lockdowns in the Guangzhou in the This is southern metropolis, a metropolis in southern China. A district in Beijing has been locked down. And so here are the numbers, right? This is how Americans think, right? China's COVID zero policy is really, really bad because, in comparison, China has 5,227 deaths from COVID. America has 1,102,505 for a difference of 1,097,278. So we've let almost 1,100,000 more people die than a country that has three times our population. And yet it is a consensus among Americans and all American media that China got it wrong. Now, you want to talk about a bunch of sicko creeps, and I'm supposed to believe that we really don't want these mass shootings and other horrible things happening. I mean,
yeah.
So that then... I wasn't even necessarily looking for this, but the same information source, and I was just looking under COVID deaths, so you can put that in your search engine and get the numbers yourself. But the current projection for March the 1st, 2023, let's just basically go ahead and say that we're pretty close to December, so it's going to be December, January, and February, the next 3 months. By then, the total will be 1,413,203. So that means we're going to be having 300,000 plus deaths over the next 3 months. And if you break that down to deaths per day, the number comes out to 3,333 deaths per day, which, if I'm remembering correctly, it was around 3,000 deaths per day. That was the death total of the surge that we had last year, or this year, right? In early 2021.
Yeah, I had to scroll down the screen quite a way for the New York Times Online edition to find the COVID line. Yeah, it used to be it was near the top, of course, there for quite a while. And it's gradually gotten lower and lower. Right now, it's pretty far down there. Now, they did have a front page story on the 18th. So what would that be, Friday? Yeah. that so it suddenly went to the top, and that story was the end of vaccines at warp speed. Financial and bureaucratic barriers in the United States mean that the next generation of COVID vaccines may well be designed here but used elsewhere. Interesting. Kind of a scandalous story. The basis of it is the having a nasal spray vaccine as the next technology, and maybe further down, it also talked about having a new basis, a new basis of how the vaccine works, because obviously it's not working too great as far as immunity.
Stopping infections.
Yeah, as far as immunity, it's pretty low, seems to be not working too well. And they're trying to get a more universal, rather than trying to attack each little mutation with this shell.
Right, design a vaccine that will target the parts of the virus that don't mutate.
Yeah, and to be more, and this is something that's quite possible. Now that these mRNA current version, this is just always the case, it seems, is these publicly funded programs, which is 100% of the mRNA vaccine, basically, then just handing it over to the private sector. So Pfizer and Moderna, Moderna was basically, you never heard of it before because it was basically the handover company where, they just handed it on over to Moderna after the public made the thing. Basically what it does is you have this patent regime and this public-private partnership, as they say, and it basically codifies this one particular drug as being the drug, right? And so if people have new or whatever ideas, getting the money, of course, this is a big scandal with Biden, a big failure, is an inability to get new funding for COVID research, which I think, personally, I think is because they don't care. I mean, they basically said that the pandemic is over. That doesn't sound like somebody
that, that's what Biden said.
Yeah, he said it was over, and if you've got that attitude, well, why would you put money into research? Why is that such a big deal? If I was the president and that was really important to me, I'd be screaming about it every day. All right, I don't hear that.
But it also supports my point that Joe Biden is just Donald Trump. I mean, because that's exactly what Donald Trump would have said and did say, right? It's no big deal. It's the flu. It's it's going to go away. It's over. How is it's over any different from those earlier versions of blowing it off?
But
the Secretary of Transportation is gay, so and that's a historical appointment, and so that's why Biden is better than Trump. And I don't mean to go back to our first topic of the show. I'm not at all saying that as any disrespect to the gay community for what happened to Club Q, but I am trying to emphasize that it's pretty meaningless. Like I would rather just not care about the orientation of the Secretary of Transportation, or for that matter, any of the people on the cabinet, right? And then not have mass shootings and by now have the pandemic under control. Like that to me would be historic. Like if America went a whole year and there were no shootings, there were no mass shootings, it would be historical. It would be something really to be proud of and to sort of support your point about going back to the moon. What if instead we just got the disease under control?
Yeah. I don't think that would be that difficult, really. not as hard to do as going to the moon, for sure.
Well, if you just got people to wear masks.
I mean, that would definitely help. And the technology is also there, since it's a technological point. I mean, there are different ways. I mean, it's quite effective, these mRNA vaccines, as far as, you know, you're not dying and probably not going to go to the hospital. Although I was looking at a chart on if you multiple infections, your chances of being hospitalized go up every time you're reinfected.
Right, that's quite worrisome.
Yeah, so maybe these vaccines are, in the long run, there definitely needs to be, like many other topics, but especially, say, climate change, or climate change, climate disaster, climate crisis, that, you know, if we turned all of our efforts into solving the problem and having some long-term thinking, it could be done. And I think COVID, we could do it in short order, right?
Why don't we have a climate force?
Yeah.
Instead of space force.
Good idea, man. Climate force. COVID force. But yeah, you don't want to be like China, for Christ's sake. I mean, authoritarian country, you know, you can't, like, you know, if it's, you'd rather just keep it going forever and ever, just so you're not like China, right? I mean,
right.
That's, I mean, this
I mean,
is very important.
That shows you what an inverted dark age mentality it is. It's almost as if, so if we could get to 2 million dead from COVID, that just makes us even better than China.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was looking on the CDC site as far as the predictions, and they don't do it, I guess, because they've had such a poor track record of predicting the various cycles. They won't officially do it. I'm sure that they do this. Again, it's the annoying side of the CDC site. It's just so limited and basic, overly basic and over minimal. Maybe if you search deeply in there, you can find scholarly research. But of course, that's not very accessible, right? It's the format's not accessible. The language isn't accessible. It doesn't lay out the whole story, and
The other problem with the CDC is that it's caught up in pandering to what the public wants to hear, right?
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
It's like everything else in America. It has this high school mentality of we have to be popular and we want people to like us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, your job is to control disease, not win a popularity contest. And so they've always been trying to, that story about when the people are on the airplane and they say, great news, ladies and gentlemen, the mandate to wear masks by the CDC has just expired. We can all take our masks off. Right. That's what the way people look at it is that I have to wear a mask because the CDC is telling me to. Mm-hmm. Not because there's a pandemic.
Right.
Not because there's a virus that might make me really sick, could kill me, but is definitely going to kill somebody else if I get it and spread it. Like, it's for sure that is going to happen.
Yeah, so
the best thing to have been doing for some time now is just to be telling people, wear a mask, get vaccinated, get boosted, and avoid large crowds.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep hammering home that message.
Yeah, and I've definitely changed my habits. Of course, I'm older now. Like, the idea of going to
Sturgis or a UK basketball game.
Yeah. Or a concert, something like that. It was never terribly high on my list, but not necessarily the most gregarious person in the world, but I've never...
Buried under the palimpsest of the pandemic.
Yeah. So me doing that isn't so hard. I mean, I do try to wear a mask as much as possible. Now, there have been recently situations where I didn't, where I probably should have. Like there was a sort of funeral wake in a Unitarian church, and there were probably, I don't know, 50 to 70 people there. Pretty low mask wearing. There were a couple, but probably would have been smart. Now there was eating going on, so you're kind of limited by that. And really, unless you've got incredible ventilation, if you're stuck in a space that's not being rapidly refreshed, you know, the virus will spread because it just kind of fogs the whole air. Eventually, the concentration will be enough that it'll spread to other people. So, I mean, to be totally safe, you would not go into those situations at all, mask or not. Now, you know, sitting in your house to the end of time is just not, I mean, when it was much more dangerous, right? This was obviously the thing to do. Now it's still somewhat dangerous, but apparently everybody has just decided that that's the new normal, that we're just going to put up with
right,
this low
that's
boil.
Cool as gold. I mean, you're yeah. just kind of going along with the herd.
Yeah.
Because other people seem to be behaving like it's over doesn't mean yeah. that it's over.
Right.
And the point that you just made gets back to a point that I've been making all along about this inane criticism of China with regard to China's yeah. COVID response, which is that if you have any idea what is going on, if you're immunocompromised, if you're contraindicated, or if you live with someone who's immunocompromised or contraindicated, you already have been living and have to live in a lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you already are living the way that people live in China. The only difference is in China, and this is a big country with the world's largest population, and so Americans read like one part of one city's been locked down, they think, well, the whole country's, you know, locked down. But if you live in China, see, the reverse is basically true of the way it is for those of us who have a brain here in America, which is you're safe to go anywhere that you want because they actually do have it under control, right? Controlling disease is a fundamental duty of government, any government, whatever you want to call it, whatever country it is. That's one of the basic reasons you control fire and disease. That's the building block of modern life. I mean, that's why we don't consider ourselves to still be living in medieval times. So if I had my choice between, I mean, the government's not telling me that I can't go anywhere. But if I do go anywhere, I'm taking this unnecessary risk. And I'm glad that you pointed out this earlier, because it was something that I certainly took note of. If you pay any attention to that report, that once you start getting reinfected, your odds of getting hospitalized go up, right? Because it's a lethal and destructive virus. So this makes sense. The more times it gets in you, the greater the damage it is, right? If you get punched in the face once, but if you get re-punched in the face, right, it's going to cause more damage. Then your risk is going up. And any time that you talk about hospitalization, for crying out loud, I mean, that's pretty serious. If you're sick enough that you've got to go to the hospital, that's something to definitely be worried about. And if you're not worried about it, you're a moron, right? And that's the problem. It isn't that the government, the CDC, has done another mandate. They're imposing on my freedom. I need to get Daniel Cameron to stand up for my freedom and put a check on this over-aggressive executive, right, that doesn't want everybody to get sick, right? And then this gets back to the other issue of overloading and inundating our healthcare systems, which have already been badgered for the last 2 years. And from everything that I can tell, both the data I'm looking at and my own sense of, you know, having followed this closely as a both as a person and a researcher, it's impossible for me to think that this is not going to be a repeat. That I mean, I think you looked this up last time. Wasn't it like the middle of January when the peak really went hardcore in 2021?
Well, that was the peak. Yeah.
Toward the end of December, January.
Going back, it started really ramping up basically mid-December. You know, there was a little peak there, the Delta peak in September. It went gradually down. It was at the bottom in November and then went nuts, I guess, with Omicron showing up. And right. Apparently there's a new variant right now that's in Europe, right? There's a new variant in Europe.
Is that the XBB?
I can't keep up with it. They need to give it a clever name, but looking at Europe on the world map, you know, nothing's quite extreme as it was in the last ones, but looks like the highest in Europe is Greece, 75 per 100,000, and then the France is 47, Italy 49, and then it kind of goes down. Well, Austria 43, Germany 30, Finland 31. Those are the high ones of Europe, and apparently they have this same thing. Now look at here's interesting. South Korea is 101 per 100,000. So it's having a big outbreak. Korea is right now. They are one place that did pretty well. I'm guessing they were kind of proto zero COVID, right? They were like very strict on watching everybody's movements, right? The contact tracing was kind of the hallmark of South Korea, right? But apparently that's, you know, not working. Japan is 67 per 100,000, so there's a pretty good outbreak in Japan. Rather alarming. And Chile is pretty much the only high one in South America. The United States stands out compared to Canada, 6.2. U.S. is 12 per 100,000. Mexico is 0.3 per 100,000, so it's under control there. So it's these first worlders that are failing big time. New Zealand, 70 per 100,000. Places that were doing pretty good at one point are not. As far as the China, before we get out of here, it's like, I think that China is just an amazing case of just completely overblown how hard it is on the people, right? Every time that somebody like grumbles, you know, and there's
hardcore oppression.
Yeah, that the, you know, this is just the most hardcore thing in the world, when really, unless you're one of these places that they locked down pretty totally, and of course, it's still, people aren't just left to starve or whatever. They're taken care of in these situations.
That's how the media makes, in America, makes it seem. That yeah. Then people can't get food or medical supplies.
Yeah.
People in America can't get food or medical supplies. I mean, Joe Manchin made sure of that when we couldn't extend the child tax credit with the worthless small triumph bill that was passed by Congress.
Yeah, yeah. So that's
certainly with getting medicine. I mean, if you don't have universal health care, it's entirely possible that people can't get medicine. And if there's any place in the world where people just grumble and go berserk about any kind of restriction or infringement on what they're doing, It's in America. So again, my point is, like, if you're going to have to go through a pandemic and a crisis, and there's going to be curtailments on how you live, the one thing that you could actually get out of it is you control the disease, which is what the Chinese are doing. And in America, we're not doing it. And what's amazing is I earlier today read a report saying that when people read that the in their local community that the community spread is high, that actually wear a mask. But if they perceive that the spread in their community is low, they won't wear one. So in the first place, why would you leave it to chance? Right? I mean, why not just say, I should just get used to wearing a mask? Because it protects you to wear a mask. But the thing is, if everyone wears a mask when they go out in public, that really offers pretty strong protection for everyone, because everyone is blocking their own air. But why would you leave it to chance? And why would you say, well, I'm going to wait until community spread is high again before I'll wear a mask? Because the numbers that you're looking at are always 2 weeks behind. Like, we don't know what's going on right now until 2 weeks from now. So the unwillingness to get the pandemic under control, along with the mass shootings, just shows a really heartless nation that I think looks at everything and every situation as just something to weaponize and use against other people.
Well, all right, let's blow this podcast up, man. In a mass way.
3, 2, 1, and ignite engines. For my co-host, David Vernon Miller, this is Dr. David W. Overby, and you've been listening to the Oblivion Podcast.